Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Vian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host.
Silent Night 13.
It's 2013. It is a prime year for Polycast. Welcome to episode 164. I'm Dan Q. I'm joined by a Makalua.
Who almost forgot to turn off her mute button.
The Mean Team.
Drinking and sieving is the path to revelation.
Imagine.
Now with less mute buttons.
And our first time guest co-host, Silent Night 13.
Hey, what's up, guys?
We are going to get started with some feedback that we have received over the past month or so, because we haven't actually recorded in almost a month.
No!
We're going to rewind a little bit to a little certain something called the sequel to the Girls Playing Civ Christmas special, Girls Playing Civ 2. And for some reason, only one of the five people on the panel right now were actually on that recording. I'm not exactly sure how that happened.
Well, it's girls playing Civ, not dudes playing Civ.
What about guys in real life playing Civ?
Are you trying to say there's no women on the internet again?
Of course there's no women on the internet. What are you talking about?
Well, you think I just have a really high voice?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're in the digital era here. You can do a lot of things to change how you sound.
True story.
Phil is wrong. The only woman on the internet is Mackie.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, because I can just pitch my voice that well. I was talking to myself that whole special.
Oh, that's pretty good.
No, the others were just guys in real life with modified voices, that's all.
No, it gave us a lot of insight into Mackie's psyche.
A lot of personalities you have to keep up with.
We got into a little discussion about Marathon, and it's basically what we had figured, that people want to use their units before they become obsolete.
Isn't that what standard speed is for?
Well, it's true, it's a very different game, though, Marathon is. And a lot of people find that appealing. I actually see some appeal in it, too. But it just makes the games take too long for my patience. But otherwise, I would probably play Marathon, especially if the turn times weren't long. That's probably the big thing, because you do have like 1,500 turns, potentially. I mean, no one actually gets that hard. But let's say like 1,000 turns to end. So, you know, if you're losing time between turns, that'll kill you. Especially late game, when you know you're winning because it's Marathon and you're dominating militarily. But you still have to hit end turn like, you know, a bunch of times to finish the game.
For people that have more patience. I mean, you'd think I would get patient as I got older, but now I'm more impatient.
Yeah, this happened to me, too, actually. Age has not brought me patience.
I used to. I would have loved that, to have Marathon and sit there and have the game take like a whole week of playing it a few hours a day. And now I'm just like, can I have this finished in the same sit-down session? Maybe it's because I've been playing multiplayer with you guys so much and I'm used to that, but...
Squeezing.
I couldn't imagine a multiplayer game at marathon speed.
God,
that'd be incredible.
That would take us a month of Sundays.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if it was, I don't know, Pit Boss or Play by Email or something.
No.
Even then.
Still, Marathon. Yeah. Marathon in general.
That'd be worse, because then you have marathon. To wait for people to log in.
Yeah, Marathon Pit Boss would take a decade, literally.
No joke.
Well, what I'm saying is you wouldn't necessarily just have to be sitting there for hours and hours on end. I mean, yeah, you'd have to wait for the turn, but you see, you could go away and come back. Although I still wouldn't recommend it. And actually, the feedback that we received about Marathon was about in the single-player realm specifically. They did not speak to multiplayer at all. I think that was the point.
Yeah, that game setting is probably not intended for multiplayer. But multiplayer is, compared to how the AI plays in the game, it's an entirely different game, pretty much. Because your opponents are actually seeking to attain the victory conditions on a consistent basis, which the AI in single-player doesn't do. So they're very different experiences from that regard.
The person who provided this comment was Dresky, and he said, on the downside, this means that games are generally decided before the Renaissance, but since I don't find modern units particularly interesting, and error unit animations make me just want to quit the game, I don't mind. Well, why don't you just turn animations off then? Like, why would you let that deter you from getting farther along?
Also, yeah, what, absolutely. No love for giant death robots?
Aww.
You know, it takes a while to get them.
I haven't seen a giant death robot in a very, very long time.
That's because nukes are the superior.
Well, generally, yes, but even getting to nukes in a very long time.
Wow. That's standard Civ, though. I think that's been true in every Civ, no? I mean, maybe not the earliest ones, I don't know, but probably there, too. I hadn't really played Civ 1 or 2 seriously. I don't know. It just seems like in every Civ game, usually it's decided or, you know, very, very strongly biased to one side winning, you know, by around the Renaissance era and sometimes earlier.
Yeah. Well, the Renaissance is so short in Civ 5, at least on higher levels.
Well, okay, then maybe industrial, but, you know, yeah. It's right in that time frame.
Yeah, you who get fighters and stuff like that first win.
Yeah. You can replace fighters with rifles in previous game or cannons and Civ 3 or whatever you want, but that's how it tends to work in 4X games. If there's something that's such a material advantage, then someone's just going to spam the heck out of it when they get there.
And there's always good old-fashioned turn advantage. You get certain stuff up running early, you have longer to run it, you get more stuff out of it.
Yep.
Anywho.
All right, anything else from the girls playing Civ?
The fact that we only received the one comment, and it was kind of a concerned comment, I think that's just a reflection of most people. If they have something to say, they're more likely to provide the feedback if it's negative or constructive criticism than to let us know just how awesome we are. You don't need to let us know how awesome we are. We know that already, so.
We'll let you know how awesome it was. Your girl's talking about Civ again.
Speaking about girls playing Civ, Phil.
Yes. You're kind of like here.
That's Phyllis, so, actually.
Phyllis. Well.
The people are the heroes.
So episode 163 feedback from Alki Bleeds. Looks like that's how it goes, or Alki Bleeds. I don't know. Am I mispronouncing this? It might be.
Is it Alki Bleeds?
No, it's another I.
Oh, that was my first guess.
Yes. Oh.
CBAs.
Alki Bleeds. I don't know.
Good enough. All right.
Alki.
It's one of those things like Archimedes.
Alki Bleeds. There we go. Alki Bleeds. That has to be it. I apologize, dude. Anyway, that is if you are, dude. If you're a girl, guy in real life, then sorry.
Well, it could be Mackie.
Yeah.
You know, another woman on the internet. It's fine. You know, you never know.
I don't believe it. Must admit I was a bit disappointed by this episode of Polycast, and more specifically the first 20 minutes talking about possibilities of an upcoming discussion. I think he means, like, some changes to the game itself. He came across as snobbish and elitist, and he doesn't consider himself particularly squirmish, but the way that many suggestions for additional game content were just discarded because members didn't like those particular suggestions, and sometimes even without a specific explanation, did strike him as very superficial.
Well, we've heard a lot of these things over and over and over again while doing this show, which is part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for some of us was like, oh, this item again, well, we'll restate my position, and then it kind of went unsaid, but if you want to hear what we have to say about that, listen to some previous episodes of the show. I think that might have been part of it. Maybe sometimes we assume that who are listening know that we talked about it before and more or less what we said in terms of our reasoning, so we just need to reiterate it. So I suppose at times we could have given a little bit more explanation, but...
Yeah, well, some of it's just... I mean, a lot of it was, well, it was Civ 4, so let's bring that back. To me, he says, well, when you make that suggestion, you just want to play Civ 4 with fancier graphics, not play Civ 5. It's the same thing, kind of, just with slightly different mechanics, and different mechanics means you can't just take stuff from the previous game and slap it in, even if you slightly adjust it. Some things don't work, like the health mechanic. It just wouldn't work. Or at least it would just be more onerous than necessary, considering we already have mechanics that do the same thing. Plus, I was being trollish. All you Zulu lovers can still... wait, I can't say that here.
Besides, but, I was correcting him even back then on the Zulu thing. It's not really... Civ does not reach its full potential unless it has Shaka in it. And that's just... the fact of the matter.
Yeah. I'm sure...
Look, mechanics are supposed to move forward, not go backwards. And that's just how games work.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I've actually seen in some related threads. I don't know why people keep going on about the Zulu. It's just nostalgia for previous Civs, and that's not a good enough reason. And I'm thinking, oh, wow.
Meanwhile, there's all this mechanical talk about nostalgia for previous Civs.
if you're going to put old mechanics into the new game, you really have to completely change how the old mechanics work to fit the new model. And the suggestions, they weren't really doing that. So I guess we could have covered why they weren't doing that and why then bringing it into the game wasn't going to be a good idea in more detail. But like Majin said, a lot of these things already have some sort of mechanic that's the same or covers the same function in Civ 5 already. So like if you wanted to put something in the game and call it health, but have it not tied into food the same way, I mean, you could do that. And depending on what you do with it, it might be fun, but you know that's not really what the suggestion was in the first place. So it's not really useful for us to completely change people's suggestions and then say, hey, we like this idea. That could take up entire episodes by itself.
We weren't exactly negative about every suggestion. There were some suggestions that were okay.
Yeah, sometimes the suggestions were just, well, here's a suggestion, and as kind of been said, there really wasn't any a further elaboration on how they would see that working in Civ 5, for example. So if you think about, well, what about that was in Civ 4 that then was brought into Civ 5? I actually think a good comparison of, in terms of something that was done reasonably well, maybe even excellent, as compared to mediocre, would be, say, religion and espionage, respectively, for reasons which we've already gotten into previously on this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of the reason I'm saying this is to try to get people to go to listen to more episodes and increase download statistics. No, I wouldn't do that.
But Dan makes that point excellently. Those are good mechanics in Gods and Kings. Espionage could use a little bit of tweaking, but I mean, it fits the model of Gods and Kings. It's not a straight port of espionage from Civ 4, and it's definitely not a straight port of religion from Civ 4. And that's a good thing, because Civ 5 is not Civ 4. So if you're going to make these suggestions, I guess, and if we're going to consider them seriously from a presentation standpoint, it would be nice to see something that actually does fit Civ 5.
Agreed.
The second paragraph he talked about, well, thankfully there's a game options menu which allows for some customization for the user, quote-unquote. So he talks about the ability to turn off certain features. And I would actually, more often than not, I would actually rather have a discussion of, well, why is it that you want to turn off a particular system? Now, he specifically mentions espionage system that he abhors it, and okay, I can understand that. So just so long as it's not, well, I don't like this system, so therefore I'll just disable it, and we don't have to talk about it anymore, we don't have to consider it anymore, we don't have to try to tweak it or anything like that. So long as that's not the next step turning it off. I mean, yes, there are going to be some things that you do. You're not going to be able to please every user. I realize Civ doesn't have the reach of, say, you know, the Skyrim franchise or, or, you know, a World of Warcraft, but still there are a lot of players in this game, and you're not going to be able to have every player say, you know what, I like this particular mechanic enough that I want to see it in the game, but I also think it's dangerous when we start talking about mechanics and there's just the ability to turn it straight off. I would rather say, no, let's talk about what it is that people don't like and see if there's a way to fix it. Air quote, fix. Because as soon as you fix it for one person, you're probably going to tick off two other people, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Just two other people?
I thought it was the 1 for 10. It's always 1 for 10.
Just the two of them. Yeah, I sang. I did it.
No.
Like a sir. Reinventing the worker system, I could go on for hours and hours and hours of just this post, and I respect everyone's opinions on it.
Except whether or not equated to mine.
Silent Night, that's okay. You go on for hours. Imagine a goal for a coffee, fill a goal for a brew, and I'll go for some yogurt, and we'll be back in a couple hours.
Right. But everything that I want to say in a nutshell, I respect his opinions and what he thinks. And this post in general is, you know, a decent post, but when you take away the worker system in Civ 5, reinvent a new worker system to where you put city workers on so that you don't actually have to have workers. You have units inside the city working the tiles for you so that in, like, say, 4 or 5 turns, you automatically get a farm on a plains tile, a grassland tile. that just takes out a whole lot of what Civ 5 is and managing your workers and knowing what to do with them. And later in the post, this guy says, how would you get trade routes out and, like, roads and stuff? And he replied saying, basically, the cities, you can already have them. And I'm just sitting here kind of, like, staring at my screen like, yeah, that's right. Automatic trade routes. Screw workers. We don't need them. We're just going to magically, spontaneously combust roads and whatnot, you know, out of nowhere, from the dirt.
You know, you couldn't have your citizens working tiles build roads over time. That, you know, that would actually be a sensible way to implement that within this mechanic. And then you build roads within your culture.
Except that you can't connect. Like, workers can only reach out so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking about that. Like, okay, so have like two little tiles that neither city can reach. You know, if they're like, say, 10 tiles apart or something, you know, but obviously that is slim, but still. You know, those two little tiles that you can't reach, it's just, what are you going to do, you know?
Well, keeping in mind that he did mention a little later in the thread that this is for Civ 6, not for Civ 5.
I guess, but then where's the fun of guarding your worker early on against barbarians and taking those chances and making Civ 5 what it's supposed to be? Civ 6, yeah, they're probably going to be a different story in Civ 6, whenever that might be in the near future, right?
I still have a belief that they'll have workers in Civ 6.
Yeah, I think so.
You know what, though? I can see them pulling it. And one of the reasons I can is because of just how flagrantly awful the AI has been with worker management pretty much forever.
But they did that in Civ Rev, and it made it boring. I mean, yeah. For the Empire building side, like, that whole side was gone.
I don't know. Like, I think you could make a dynamic system without workers. Now, would it be a better game? I would need to see it and play it. It would be difficult to say that ahead of time. But when you're looking at it, like there are a lot of commands you have to make every turn with workers, and that can drag. It certainly can. Yeah.
But just to remind you, what he's suggesting is putting that all into the city screen. So there will be a lot of commands that you have to give on many turns in the city screens individually rather than on the map with a unit that can be that can have an opportunity cost of getting lost.
Yeah, but you have a that's within the current limitations of the current UI, though. And you could very easily change how you manage these tiles.
So yeah,
you could also have a city to do it. That would not be something that would be difficult to do.
UI system, not difficult. Have you seen games?
Well, okay, fine. I'm sure that making a great UI is difficult in that Firaxis hasn't done it yet, but other games have, so it's certainly possible.
Ever,
there we go.
Ever.
Actually, one thing that kind of puts a big hole in the concept is the specialty tiles. You know, originally he's like, well, you just put it on the tile, and if it's, you know, a grassland near a river, it'll automatically build a farm over time, and you don't have to do anything. Well, what happens if you want a trading post or some other specialist-type tile out there? Then you have to stop and tell it not to do that automatic thing. And
I think for luxuries, it should automatically improve it as the luxury, but when you have the option between farm and trading post, you know, maybe you can make a setting that it automatically defaults to one, or, you know, but otherwise you can change it.
Yeah, he suggested that if you're on, like, default focus, it'd make farms, but if you're on economic focus, it'd make trading posts. But then I have to stop and ask, like, well, if you're going to program that and you flip back and forth between the two, is it constantly going to switch the tiles?
I think you'd have to be able to change it by tile if you really wanted to make a system like this.
Yeah. Right.
Or by hex. Would be hexes are better,
or whatever it happens to be.
Hexes are always better.
They are. I mean, I still think Civ 4 is a better game overall, but hexes are better.
But again, this comes back to micromanagement. Now you're microing each individual tile or
hex.
Yeah, but you're doing that anyway with workers. And they're like, whether you put a worker there into it.
That's the point.
It's not really that much better. It's almost the same thing. And not to mention, most of the people that I know, except for the people that don't play Civ 5 League, or any decent multiplayer or single player person, they don't know how to go in and manually work their tiles. I've noticed this in games, and they're like, how is your science so high? Well, I'm working my universities. They're like, how are you doing that? I'm like,
these guys are not going to manage their workers properly either.
Exactly.
Like, even if they have workers and they build tile improvements, they're going to build the wrong tile improvements. They're going to prioritize them wrongly. You're not going to get away from that. That's part of the difference between a good player and a bad player. But you know, you could definitely save some investment things early on in terms of hammers, in terms of the movement micro and that kind of thing by removing workers. I don't see it as something that isn't viable, potentially, but you would have to handle it well, and it would be a fairly significant change. So
yeah, you're right. You're right, but when half the players don't even know how to micromanage anything inside their city, it doesn't say a whole lot.
I'm saying it's in the tutorial because half the players don't know how to control their workers properly either, or when to build enough, or how many is enough, or that kind of thing.
We're not building a game for people who don't know how to use it.
Well, that's true, yeah. too.
You're building a game for people who will take the time to know how to use it. If you don't know how to use it, don't complain about it. Learn
how to
use it.
Which is why we will never see Civ sell as well as Call of Duty, by the way. And for reference, I absolutely hate Call of Duty now, but that's
now. So anyways, for Civ 6, I would agree with Phil that there is potential for a way of doing it without workers, but again, it's going to have to redo the whole thing. And actually, it kind of pushed into my preferred plan is that more stuff is on the map. So if your city buildings are on the map and you're building into specific hexes and other stuff and you don't necessarily have a city-specific screen, you have an empire that you're building and it's all on the map, then yeah, maybe getting rid of the workers might be useful because then you can just click on a tile and tell it to do something if it's within range of blah, 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 blah.
That would be incredible if you could do it the right way. Man, would that be awesome. That's been a complaint for a while. Like, okay, you have this one central location that's a city, and then everything else is less significant. Well, maybe not anymore, but oh, yeah. Man.
That would
there's
be
so
cool.
many things to address from a design standpoint.
Of course. But it would be cool, and in that sort of ideology of it's all on the map and you have to do that stuff, then yeah, you probably wouldn't need workers because then you can just do it all on the map. The way that Civ has been designed forever, the worker system does seem to work out a little better.
In the last topic, I talked about, you know, you make a change and one person becomes happy and then two people become unhappy potentially. I see replacing workers as maybe a one step forward and two step back because I definitely hear the frustration about the micromanagement of the workers to some extent and in particular the automation where you think, you know what, I'm going to help save myself and let's put this on automation and you might as well just go ahead and delete your units and
yeah. Faster that way.
It's just faster that way. And I know that there was the one point, and I think, Madgen, you talked about how it was discussed in the thread, how if you were on, you know, default focus, it would focus on food, and if it went on economic focus, that it would have trading posts or whatever equivalent, because, again, we're talking about this for a Civilization 6 as opposed to a Civilization 5. In Civilization 5, you can lock tiles, right? You can say that, okay, if I want you to focus on gold focus in Civ 5, but this tile that's food, I want you to work that, and you could lock that. So that way you might be able to avoid that, well, if I want gold focus right now, then I want science focus, and I want the default for the food focus. I want to go back and forth, then maybe you limit, you know, your quote-unquote concept of automated workers going in and keep changing your tiles. But I think a lot of it comes down to that in the micromanagement that there's meaning for that micromanagement. And, I mean, there are some things that I like in Civilization Revolution for, you know, managing your cities, but that's for Civilization Revolution. Talked about, you know, like the roads automatically, but the roads could only be between cities. The game decided for you what that route would be, and that was a matter of going into a city screen and saying, build a road, and it costs a certain amount of gold. And then you could get into a consideration, well, what if you had it so that you could have workers and you could build a road, or you could go ahead and just buy the road? And I know if you're thinking, well, if it's like Civ 5 where gold gets you lots of anything anyway, isn't that open to abuse and that kind of dilutes the need for a worker?
Well, it could act as a bit of a gold sink.
Oh, roads are a gold sink.
Well, yes, but even more so if you could buy all the different improvements.
Hmm.
I was kind of back and forth on whether I would be in favor of this or not. And he does say, like, reinventing the workers system. So it's not so much, let's get rid of workers, not going to the city. Let's forget about workers. Let's forget about improvements. Let's forget about all that. It's not that extreme. But it's kind of like, you know, how we talk about, you know, democracy is the best worst form of government we've ever had. Well, maybe workers are the best worst form of managing your cities that we've had. One person actually suggests a hybrid. Alpha Wolf 64 says, I like to see basic improvements like farms, mines, lumber mills be automatically built, not by workers, but simply by being worked by a city. But for more advanced improvements, which includes roads and rails in that, is where a worker or engineer comes into play. And if there's anything I can agree on in the end, is that would be distracting. I think that would be a turnoff for new players and even experienced players. That would detract. So I think either you need to continue to improve the worker system, which I think a primary focus, and we've talked about in previous episodes of the show, is the automation. Because I think if the automation could be intelligent, I mean, you might have to train it to some of your preferences. That's fine. But then if you could train it and it was consistently doing a good job, then I think a lot of what probably this stems from, the micromanagement, would go away, as opposed to saying, let's just try to find something completely different, because all you're doing, as I think Silent Night 13 was saying, that you are shifting the micromanagement from the workers on the map to micromanagement within the city. I mean, sure, there's some automation within the city, and I think city automation, you know, like the gold focus that we see in Civ 5 is better than worker automation, but it still needs a lot of work. I support the intent, but the direction that's being suggested here, no.
Basically, you're still hoping that the developers know what you're thinking before you think it, if you leave it all on automation.
Or that they'll just make it do something that's stronger so that they actually know how to play better than you, which is a possibility, especially in new players. But I don't know if that's the best route you want to go.
Yeah.
Everyone play optimally automatically.
No. It should be sufficient.
Automation should never be optimal. Optimal should be you as the human understanding the mechanics and doing what you need to do in order to do the best that you possibly can with what you have.
Be all that you can be.
So competent AI for automation.
Yeah, right.
And hey, I can dream. And better education for Civ players as well. And that can include, by the way, not necessarily people having to go onto forums to find answers, but within the user interface itself. I know there's a lot we got to have on a user interface anyway, but hey, a meaningful tutorial.
We have a Civpedia. Write something in it that makes sense.
There you go. I see you have a worker that hasn't done anything for a few turns. Is that really what you want? And if you're more advanced or a comfortable player, then there's an option you can go in and turn off. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of turn-offs, turn-ons, and pressing buttons, next.
Well, let's go miles beyond, because that's who actually wrote the post. Oh, wait, how did I get this topic? I think I actually asked for it, but then I forgot. This is an actual Civ 4 topic. So we need to get that head space going. Not Civ 5, this is Civ 4. So miles beyond had an idea for Civ. He wants to bring in the logistics concept that space turn-based strategy games end up using, rather than the Stack of Doom. So his basic concept is that consider each army to be a fleet style, because that's what space does. And then over time with techs and other such things, you can increase the size of the army, and then those armies can wander around, and they can get bigger. But the problem with that is as they get into the discussion, they start talking about, well, the city should have extra logistics caps with buildings and stuff like that. But then you go, okay, well, my stack of attacker, I have 5 of those, but they're all smaller than the defender stack, and the defender is constantly going to win that fight. The balance of attacker versus defender starts causing troubles. I mean, Stack of Doom versus anything, it's always going to cause troubles, no matter what system you go. The one problem, he's calling it logistics, but he's not actually wanting the logistics mechanics from space games. He just wants a semi-stack. So yeah. Not one unit per turn, it'll be X unit per turn.
I think it would be better to call this, like, stack limitation or something.
Yeah, because
there really isn't much logistics here. I mean, aside from how, like, maybe from a user standpoint, how you're going to control these mini stacks all over the place. But yeah, there's no, like, supply line, there's no tactical movement questions or something like that.
The space turn-based system games, logistics as a concept is not just how many, you know, the total size of your fleet. It's each different type of ship, as you get bigger ships, cost more to be in the fleet. So, you know, a big ship will cost, say, 4 times the amount to be in that fleet than a small ship, except that you can get 4 times the small ships to do some damage, but the big ship might survive longer. The problem with that is we don't have that in Civ. Every unit's going to have the same amount of space in each of them, so it's not really a logistics thing, unless you start going, well, that artillery is going to take, you know, 2 slots in the army, et cetera, et cetera. But then that wouldn't be so realistic
Still, this isn't a bad framework with which to work. Though, as I think, I thought about this a little bit.
Yeah.
In Civ 4, you could change some defensive mechanics such that this becomes viable. The limited movement in enemy territory, you could do something with that. I don't know, as long as you don't make the defender have way too many units in the city, I mean, you could do the old surround and pound attack, or you can modify how much defensive bonuses they have in cities, or leave the defensive bonuses but not give them bonus units in a city, because there's no way, like, if you say you have a stat cap of 5 to 8, that 5 to 8 attackers are going to kill 5 to 8 defenders, unless the air advantage is obscene, like you're playing on Chieftain or something and you're an immortal player. Okay, maybe you could do it then, but normally you would need to bring a couple stacks and get some surrounding going on the city, and, you know, it could even replace that siege mechanic to some extent, or improve the tactical element of combat in the game, but it would nerf the heck out of the AI, because the AI really relies on its stacks of doom in Civ 4. So you would need to do something with that. That's the major bottleneck I see in single-player play, is that the AI would not be able to use its bonuses in war effectively because of the stack limitations. You could really annihilate it with chokes. But then again, the AI in Civ 4 doesn't really try to win anyway, so it's not that big a deal.
What would be interesting if the only way you could have units above a certain tech level wandering around is if you had to put them in the armies.
What do you mean above a certain tech level?
Like once you get past warriors and archers, you know, like basic first two or three kind of units, you know. I'm trying to figure out where that would come in, but...
So you're saying you could stack later arrows more?
Or less.
Yeah,
I would almost bias towards less.
To build... Like, you have a certain amount of logistics points generated by buildings, and you make an army unit that you fill up. I don't know. It's in my head, but I can't quite get it out.
There's three concepts of armies. Interesting.
It's basically what all this is. I mean, a Stack of Doom is just an army. Just it's unlimited in the size of it. I mean, yeah, basically it's just limited stacks is where he's going. And I think you're right. I mean, if this idea got put in, as suggested by somebody else, not only do you have to put it in the game, which should be the easy part, just limiting the stack to a limited amount and then adjusting from there. But teaching the AI how to use it, if you actually want to play against the AI ever again.
That would be the difficult part.
Yeah.
This kind of idea would work a little bit better if it was only multiplayer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, if you know the AI is not going to be around, then go nuts.
The AI is going to go, huh?
Although in multiplayer, the defender advantage would be obscene because of the roads and the ability to move on them in defensive terrain, especially after engineering. You'd be able to attack the same stack with so many stacks. That'd be bad.
So in following this conversation so far, possible suggestion of limiting the number of units, is that, are people thinking that that's on the basis of a particular number? And if so, perhaps a different way to go about limiting the number of units, you could have it based on unit type. So, for example, on a particular hex, I know this is Civ 4 based, hex, square, whatever, tile, there you go, I'll encompass it all. On a particular tile, okay, you could have some value that is, this is the maximum number of siege units that you can have in a particular stat. You know, melee units, gunpowder, archery. I'm not necessarily saying better or worse than just the straight stack of doom or the carpet of doom that we have now in Civ 5. And by the way, just as an aside, I disagree with the opening poster saying that one unit per turn is a fiasco in Civ 5. But anyway.
Yeah, just skip that.
I felt the need to acknowledge that portion anyway and my disagreement with it, but if we're going to talk about limiting, when I start, okay, if it's one or it's, when we say unlimited, I mean, there's always kind of an asterisk in there, which is essentially Empire can freaking handle, and heck, maybe what your computer can handle too, I don't know. I could see this working possibly. Actually, I'd like to see it tinkered with when you base how many units of a particular type you could have, which could scale according to how you are progressing in the tree and the eras and technologies that you receive, where then as you go over time, certain type of units, the maximum number for that type could increase or decrease, and others could increase or decrease, maybe as kind of a, you know, a reverse correlation as you progress.
I don't like it, because that removes some strategy from once you compose your stacks within the framework of a limited stack. Is, okay, if you can only put X in, but you can actually make your stack bigger in aggregate by adding Y as well, why wouldn't you just spam the hell out of X and Y and make your stack as large as possible until you hit the cap? But then you would have the same unit composition constantly with whatever your current stack limitation is. So you really wouldn't have to make any dynamic choices in terms of how to comprise your stacks. Yeah. You would just build as much as possible.
Well, you would have to decide, okay, these combination of units, where am I going to be placing these units relative, you know, in the field, to the city? Do I have defensive bonus capabilities? Do I not?
That exists regardless. Mm-hmm. Still, as long as you're limiting stack composition by type, you're removing your type composition as a significant strategic element.
Well, I'd probably suggest that you could go, say, siege units cost twice as much as a melee unit to be in the stack. So at least you limit the number of siege units.
Oh, sure.
Brought through.
Sure. I'm not sure that's necessary, though, especially because if you have stack limitations, a large number of siege is suddenly a large liability as you are going to get it killed very quickly.
Yeah, but that's the sort of thing that you could probably try and do.
Oh, sure. And that wouldn't be a bad thing to explore if one unit found itself too prevalent. Otherwise. Yeah.
But that's usually the point. When you decide to go for a cap and you want to do a logistic style where there's things cost more, you just figure out what's the worst possible, you know, what's the most OP sort of thing that can be in a stack.
How can the player abuse
and then divide that by two. And then start cutting down the amount that you're about to have. But then, even then, I still wouldn't want to see this sort of thing, like a fully based logistics thing in Civ, just because it doesn't make sense. Limited stacks for Civ 4? Sure, maybe. You can get around with that, but not a full-out logistics.
I think if handled properly, it could make Civ 4 better.
Yeah, don't think so.
Really?
When you
I don't like that Civ 4 is about that. I really don't. You get a tech lead, you bring in, like, 40 of something, or 50 or something, or even more, and you just kind of right-click into cities with your tech lead.
Yeah, but you'd be able to do that anyways. If you
I guess.
It doesn't matter the system. If you have the tech lead and your units are better than theirs, you're still going to right-click your way through.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I can't help but think in a number of seasons past, some people would say, you know, the discussions are interesting, but all you guys and gals do is agree with each other. Well.
Yeah.
Our guy wants to have a new unit, a colonist, because he thinks that a key weakness of gods and kings is inability to simulate colonization. Wait, didn't we do this in Civ 3 with the resources where you'd send out a guy to get them so you didn't have to build a city for that one tile island with something on it?
Is that what this is about?
No, this is more cities, but...
Yes, it is, but it's more involved than that, too.
Yeah. And is it really just G&K that has the problem with colonization? I mean, Civ 4 really didn't do... so well at it either.
It's the latest Civ, so I guess that's why it's on the hot seat.
Yeah, okay.
And so he's suggesting a new military unit to be unlocked at the same time as the Caravelle would have some defense and really high mobility. Oh, so you'd have like a super fast unit that could go and grab new territory if you were playing on a map where there was open territory left, though. That's the thing.
You could rush this, though, and spam the bejesus out of colonies everywhere under his suggestion. Because look at this. You don't have a social policy cost increase, but it gives you twice the gold and what is it? Where was that? So he said, don't increase the culture cost policy or lower happiness. They would produce no science, but yield twice the gold in some culture. Yeah. I mean, you don't have any downside for owning these. Just spam the crap out of them. Like, build some colonies next to your capital, maybe. Just build them everywhere. Colonies.
Well, sure. Like, if the colonies could only ever be the basic main hex and the hexes right around it, you could fill in all those little gaps in between your cities.
Yeah, well, it says when they hit a certain size, they become fully independent city-states or dominions, city-states with which you have 100 influence. So basically, you get to spam out a huge number of allies that'll give you crap.
Oh, man, the patronage tree makes me smile.
Yeah.
Troll-a-la-la-la, indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get away from balance here, because from a balance
standpoint,
keep going, because there's more further down the thread. Basically, realistically, this is a couple things. One is the common problem, which I think most people understand and or dislike with Civ series. Founding a city later eras takes way too much effort to bother setting them up, because you're not going to get paid back, because you start with basically nothing and you have to rebuild it from scratch, and that's just a waste of time because you're never going to get the output from it to pay back for doing it. So that's one problem that's fairly common. Another one is the whole concept of having colonies, which is completely different. And a third one is about rebellions. If you read a little bit further down, the question of whether or not colonies can rebel Dissentive or whatever. So basically, it's mixing in quite a number of concepts in the thread. I think for the first part, the whole being able to get a new unit that, or at least some mechanism that when you settle a modern city, they don't start rubbing sticks together when you found the city. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Problem with that. It's like in each era, when you built a new city after that, you got certain buildings granted. Kind of like what it does on an advanced start.
Or even just give the city X number of anvils at the start after you build it, so you can pick what you build in the city.
As long as you can't make a wonder with it.
No.
Yeah, I think you would have to restrict it to buildings only, but you would then be able to pick which buildings you put in there. Or maybe, like Mackie's saying, it might be simpler just to give some standard buildings. I'm not sure what would be more useful.
Yeah.
It'd be easier to code that way.
Like Super Settler, or maybe not even a new unit, just have this happen after a certain era.
Well, actually, there's already a mod, one of the people who basically just did that. So every settler, as you go up in Eris, you just get the advanced start-based buildings.
Makes sense.
Now, granted, that can lead to some questions, as in you spam out a bunch of settlers and you leave them in their setting spot and then go from medieval to renaissance just to make sure that you get extra buildings.
Oh, if you were trying to bank up settlers because you knew you were about to hit a new tech era?
Yeah. That could cause little gaming problems, but...
just a little bit.
A little bit buggy there.
But it depends on... I guess it would depend, because you could also say, well, okay, you built the settler in the medieval era, so you can, era-base the settler.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
No, I mean, okay, you're building these things in lieu of other things earlier. You're not building wonders, you're not building military units, you're building nothing but settlers... And then hoping that you're going to have the land to take significant advantage of a large number of pre-built settlers. I don't know that that's a huge advantage necessarily to get a couple extra buildings from the Renaissance.
Well, you can rush by. Don't forget.
I was going to say that could also cost to go up too. With the era to reflect the idea. Yeah, to reflect the idea that they're going out better equipped instead of one guy with a stick and a backpack,
Except that you've already paid for them before the era hit.
Well, when you're gaming it, but I meant normally.
Yeah,
so I would almost suggest in that case that the era that they're built in determines what you get. So you can't just, store them.
Well, how much extra do you get, really, though? Because if it's not that much, then the incentive for doing this is not...
Free workshop at one point. That's a lot of production saved and added. Free monuments means instant culture, which means instant border growth. Depending on if you did a religion thing, free shrines mean free faith, et cetera, et cetera. And granary, mass food, if you have food around.
I see.
Most people would probably agree that that sort of thing should happen because, realistically, what the complaint comes down to is, you hit the Renaissance era, you're playing on a Terra map, and no one bothers sending settlers over to the New World because why? Because by the time you get there and get them up to speed, it'll be too late.
The game will
but
be
if
over.
You make the production of the settlers too much of a hammer sink, you get the exact same problem. It's too costly to build a bunch of new cities then instead of just killing your enemies.
So that's the point. People want to be able to colonize New World and have it matter. And that makes sense. Later game colonization should still make that city eventually matter. But that's only one piece of his whole colonist concept.
The different kind of city is another matter entirely. The way it's proposed, it's so imbalanced that it's asinine. But could it be reworked in a way that it's not completely ridiculous?
Yeah, there's a good basic idea there.
Yep. Although I do think in Civilization V, when you're talking about going to, we found new land, there's nobody here, it's time to settle and bring that city up to speed. Given the fact that, in Civilization IV, you had to wait till you had universal suffrage to be able to buy things in cities. So long as you had a sufficient amount of gold, you could go, hey, all right, let's buy that workshop. And now I've got maintenance on that workshop. Let's buy that granary. Now I've got maintenance on that granary. I don't think it's quite as bad in Civilization V, assuming you have the economy to support that, which I'm assuming that if you've decided, it's time to go somewhere else, that you either have some kind of economic base, you want to make an even larger empire, or if you're looking at yourself and saying, man, I'm squished on this continent. Maybe this is like the homeland, but maybe this eventually won't be, where my primary base is. If I start focusing on gold, gold focus and trading resources and getting great merchants and this, that, and the other thing, that could actually be viable, and we wouldn't necessarily have to have this colonist mechanic at all.
No.
A lot of gold.
It's a big gold sink.
It is.
And at that point, I'd rather be spending all that money on universities or puppets or, well, city-states before they become puppets or other such things. Because, I mean, you're never going to found a city in the modern to atomic era and expect it to be of value. And that's the only real time where you've got so much money that you can just throw it around like that.
Yeah, unless you're getting a resource, I can't picture it.
Yeah, but you're not building the city. You're just slapping it down, improving the uranium.
Or right on top of the uranium, maybe not even bothering to improve it, yeah.
That's a different story. For his other parts of the ideas, dropping a new city that becomes a city-state, not sure that's a good plan.
You've won a diplomatic victory. Really?
Yes. Spam all the nooks and crannies with these new city-states, suddenly I win.
The AI does that already.
yes, but...
Some AI killed him, though.
Yeah, eventually, but... I don't know, the whole creating a dominion across the land, yeah. I mean, you have to bring back in the full mechanic of will puppets, and as mentioned further down, question of, about independence. Will they have rebellions? As in, every single puppet city should have a chance to rebel and become a city-state, not just colonies, as being said by KRC somewhere in here. Distance from the capital, military occupation, length of puppetry, overall happiness and unhappiness, local, that is, plus the empire probably, could all influence the chance of rebellion, probably, and with some other stuff.
And he also suggests that colonists can be used to found the puppet cities, at which point the unit converts to a worker.
Yes, there's also that option, which is in there as well. So not only do you build one unit and get two, you build a unit, get a puppet, which doesn't actually cost you culture, because it's a puppet, not anything else, and you get extra stuff. Yeah, there's some ideas being thrown around in here, but I'm pretty sure from a balance perspective, most of that is going to be dangerous.
Not very balanced at all, for sure.
On average, we had about 3,400 unique visitors a month throughout 2012, 123 gigabytes of MP3 traffic each month. Wow. Most people spent about 0 to 30 seconds on the website, and that's because they found what they were looking for right away, not because they didn't find anything of interest. most people were using Windows at about 78%, followed by Macintosh at 14%. And the distribution of the browsers, Firefox and Google Chrome, were kind of equal there. And 21% of people still using Internet Explorer. Safari at 12%. But I think what's really of interest is to talk about the Polycast Season 6 survey results over at SurveyMonkey. We received 81 responses, which was a 37% increase of the 59 responses we received last year. So thank you very much for that. We removed the pre-recorded live preference question from 2011 because...
We're not going back to that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mackie. Change the episode length preference from a favorite to a four-based ranking. So in other words, rank between 30, 45, 60, and 75 minutes, which is your first and second preference, and so on. I also removed the less than 30 minutes and more than 75-minute options because that's too little and too much, respectively.
Yeah.
So take that.
Also changed the recording frequency from a favorite to a four-based ranking, and I changed the guest return question to be optional as opposed to mandatory, where if you didn't want any of the guests we had last year back on this year, you just didn't answer that question at all. I think the best change and the biggest change was something that was discussed last year, and I know Phil in particular will enjoy this, that brief descriptions of the segments in Polycast were included rather than just the name of...
Yes.
And I still wanted it to have 10 questions because, you know, I love things on the base of 10, you know, like top 10 lists. Ho-ho. I added a website content design and functionality ranking question. Question number one was about how long do you want episodes to be? They've been 60 minutes in length since 2011. And for the second year in a row, 60 minutes was the preference. The first and second preference most commonly checked boxes were 60 minutes. The frequency with which we record, I thought this was an interesting result. Once again, like last year, biweekly, every other week, one, but not by much. It was very close. In terms of a first preference, biweekly was 39, so again for every other week. But 35 people, as their first preference, said they wanted it weekly. Now, of course, you say that, but if we actually try to do that, you may
change your mind.
You may get sick of us. We might actually run out of things to talk about.
Clearly, the third preference was monthly, and the fourth preference was quarterly. Very few people said that. Surprise with question number three to me. Segments that you would like to see included in 2012. Last year, top spot went to Forum Talk. Not this year. That went to Senate, debating game strategies. But seeing as how this is a strategy podcast, I guess it's not surprising, although 11 people didn't check that as something they wanted out of the 81. Silver went to Forum Talk. So, investigating hot strategy issues in Civ community forums. So it didn't surprise me that that was second. Last year, news was second and Research Lab was third. Last year, theater was last, where we discuss, our recent games. This year, theater was the third most popular response. It went from last to third about sharing recent gameplay experiences.
They'd like to hear how we fail.
Apparently so.
If we can fail, then anybody can fail. Is that what it is? I don't know.
Something like that, yeah.
Exactly.
But I think it is fair to say, for those thinking, what, Research Lab wasn't in the top three? There was one more vote for theater over Research Lab, so it was very, very close. In last was miscellaneous. That which does not fall into any of the other categories, which is kind of amusing to say because talking about this, say, files under miscellaneous. So, anyway. 4, 5, 6, and 7 asked about assorted measures. One was about having passion, being excited about what we have to say. The most popular response was 9, that we do a superb job in having passion. Oh, that's very kind.
They can tell we care.
Yay!
Organization on a podcast being described as professional. Let's have an awkward pause now. This surprised me. The most popular answer was 8. Excellent. So
there you go.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
So we've got them fooled really good then, huh?
Yep. Apparently so.
Well, either that or people's definition of professional is pretty low. I don't know. One
magic
or the
of editing. That's true, man. You look at the work scene today and the amount of, quote, professional things being done.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
true. We might be relatively professional.
For a certain value of professional, you're saying?
Yeah.
And then there's certain professions, too, so there's that.
Question 6 was about having dialogue, so that was connecting with our audience, and the most popular response to that was 9. Superb. Wow.
Apparently we connect, even though they don't talk back.
We do our best.
No. See, that goes back to what we were saying. We don't get a lot of feedback because most people are happy with what we're doing, and most people aren't likely to say they're happy with what we're doing, only when we're doing something wrong, usually, right? I mean, that's where you get the passion behind saying something to somebody is when you're, like, royally ticked off. And then the website question, must admit I was a little concerned about this one, but I threw it in there anyway. The most popular response was 8, was excellent, followed by 7 and 6. So, okay, so... Okay, that's great. Moving swiftly along, balance. And I know we talk about this, us regular co-hosts, and we talked about this even last year. Balancing Civilization 4, Civilization 5, and Civ series coverage in general. Probably one of the more contentious, to me, questions on here, and one of the issues that we deal with on the show.
I want more Civ 2.
All 5 people? What?
Yeah.
Both the first and second most popular responses had Civ 5 coverage primarily in there. What surprised me, though, is that the second most popular response did not have Civ 4 as secondary coverage, but rather Civ series in general secondarily. But, because each one of these options had, like, Civilization 5 coverage primarily as first, and then Civ 4 and Civ as well. If you combine the 2 points that had Civ 4 coverage primarily in there, 75%. 61 out of the 81 said we want Civ 5 coverage primarily. 19% said they wanted Civ 4 coverage primarily, and 6% said Civ series primarily. And last year, it was almost an even split between Civ 4 and Civ 5, where Civ 5 edged out Civ 4 by 2 votes. So that is a definite shift. And again, this is, of course, based on the responses that we received. 81. We're not necessarily saying that that's the way everybody thought, but certainly as a snapshot, a reflection of the audience that participated in this, that's what we got.
If you don't like it, remember to vote.
Come this December, you only have to wait 11 more months. Hey, you get to fill out a Polycast feedback survey more often than you get to vote.
Yes, but the results are less consequential.
Yeah.
Yeah. We won't say anymore because this isn't Politicast.
Yeah.
Number 9, the names of guests that appeared on one or more episodes. Now, imagine last year you and Sula had tied.
It's because I didn't vote for myself.
Meh.
This year, we had another tie.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I'm not in the list, right? So.
No, because you're a regular co-host now. Sorry about that.
Damn it.
I know you were a guest too, but I wasn't going to put you on both. Since,
come on, I got to win both.
No, you only get to win one of them.
Damn it.
You can see me sticking my tongue out at you because this is an audio-only show, but there, I'll vocalize it a little more for you.
All right.
You're welcome. The tie was between returning guest Derek Kale Paxton.
Oh, yeah.
A little mod for Civ 4, Fall from Heaven 2, and then...
Thing following Enchantrix, what?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, Madden still wants Forbidden Enchantress, but... in a late rally, and by late rally, I mean like in the last few days, tied with our guest from episode 160, Monthar. Congratulations to both Monthar and Kale for being the most sought guests to be back in 2013. Second place went to Kaya from episode 159. He was just 3 votes behind. And in third, returning guest co-host Alpha Shard.
Really?
Yeah, with 18. Now, he edged out both Canuck Soldier and Arrolo 1 by 1 vote. I will say, though, that only 2/3 of the people who participated in the survey actually checked any name at all.
Interesting. I just can't pick a favorite. I just can't.
You don't have to pick a favorite. You could have picked money.
Wait, so you pick money?
Yeah, get paid to vote.
Is that your strategy for this poll?
No.
Well, that may inform the number 10. Who was the favorite Polycast regular co-host? Last year, Phil won this with 39% of the vote. Imagine you won this year with 44%.
I knew you would.
What? What do you mean you knew I would?
I knew you would.
It's not like Dan Kim on Beyond the Monument happens every Saturday opposite this past and said Polycast, fill out the survey. Like you would do that.
No, happen.
I think you would have won anyway because you're our central figure and like high-level strategy for Civ 5.
I don't know about that.
And then look at our audience preferences. I mean, come on now. It's only fair.
Yeah, although to be fair, we were tracking, you know, the surveys, and I think most of the votes had already been taken place before Beyond Monuments.
I will say, and then for the second year in a row, I was second. I was second to Phil, and I'm second to Imagine. Well, that's fine.
Aww. Actually, although to be fair, when Dan came on Beyond the Monument and said to everybody to go do the survey, I told them all to vote for Lisa. So how did that work out?
Not well, apparently.
Not well. Mackie, you were in third.
Oh, man. That's from a PA, Mackie.
It was very close. It was very, very, very close. So
yes, but how much?
I beat you by one vote.
Oh.
Thanks to all the 81 people who participated in the survey.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Just like in anything, I mean, anything that's worthwhile doing is not going to be easy, but it's worth it because, you know, we're worth it, and so are you two, audience. Aww, group hug.
I knew he was going to say group hug.
Nah, Mac knows me well. You know, Mackie and I have been together for 7 years.
Hey, what's it?
On the show.
Thank you.
Right.
Watch how you phrase
right,
that.
Right.
I didn't say that way on purpose, Mackie.
Mackie's pretty emphatic about how you phrase that thing. I still think we should permanently ally Mackie.
If they weren't being entertained, they wouldn't be coming back, so.
True.
True story.
Word.
True story, bro. Anyway, this has been Polycast episode 164. I'm still Makalua. Dan's still crazy.
I'm still crazy. Well, you want to know something? Logistically, tactical strategic consideration may or may not be in order.
Big words, big words.
What are you trying to do? Fit a bunch of $10 words into a sentence to make it a $100 sentence or something? What is that?
Get a dictionary, people.
The meat team.
I'll show you tactical consideration.
Imagine.
I'll show you a dictionary.
It's not what he says, it's how he says it.
This is why he won, by the way. And I approve.
And our guest, Silent Night.
Thank you for having me, guys. Great.
This was a laugh.
Great. Thanks for that.
It's been great.
I'm sorry, Silent Night. Were you feeling left out?
No.
Silent Night.
No. Get out of here, you goof.
Yeah, Dan, we don't sing at the guests.
Few exceptions.
Beep, leep, beep, beep, beep. Recorded January 12th, 2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.